The struggle at the Pacifica Network to adopt new bylaws suffered a setback this week as three of the five Pacifica local station boards rejected the final bylaws draft. Evan Davis has more.
For more than 19 months now, the Pacifica Radio Foundation has been struggling to adopt new bylaws that will allow its listeners and staff to elect the Foundation's local and national governing boards, thus making Pacifica the first democratically operated national broadcast network in history. But this week, three of the five Pacifica local station boards failed to ratify the final version of the draft bylaws, which the California courts had ordered earlier this month to be sent to local boards for approval. Board members and activists in the network were deeply divided on the issue of racial diversity in the composition of Pacifica's boards. Everyone favored strengthening diversity, but some felt the only way to assure diverse boards was to create set-aside seats for people of color and to have this mandated in the bylaws. Mimi Rosenberg, member of the WBAI local board in New York, speaking at the meeting where the draft bylaws were defeated.
There is nothing more fundamental than how glib and how easy it is to say that what our responsibility here is to pass bylaws, change them ultimately, even if it means that there is nothing substantive and substantial about the inclusion of the disenfranchised historically in this country, and yes, in the white left movement as well. That's what the issue is about that has brought us to this.
But while the vote was substantially against the bylaws in New York and at Pacifica's Washington, D.C. station WPFW, two of the five station boards approved the bylaws overwhelmingly, and with the fifth station board at KPFK in Los Angeles, the vote was almost evenly divided. The bylaws were defeated there by a vote of 11 in favor and 12 against. KPFK local board member Lorian Mirza, who supported the bylaws, spoke before the vote at the meeting this week.
The idea that draft B is somehow not for diversity really appalls me. This is not that kind of issue, and I think the divisiveness that has been used to present the other side has appalled me. It has hurt our ability to get along together. And it is time that we move on to elected boards.
Staff members at KPFK tended to support the bylaws, which would have guaranteed that one quarter of the new board representatives would be elected directly by the station staffs. Sonali Kohatkar, host of KPFK's new morning program, Uprising, is part of the staff delegation on KPFK's current interim board.
Issues of problems between staff and management at the station have fallen through the cracks. These issues have been continuously tabled, and I think it's time that that needs to end. And so with the backing of my staff, I voted to approve draft B as the bylaws, and I think the situation of the station is at such a high crisis that unless something happens soon, there's going to be a very, very serious uproar from within.
The new bylaws would also have offered representation on Pacifica's national board for Pacifica's affiliate stations. Norm Stockwell is the operations coordinator for WORT-FM in Madison, Wisconsin, a longtime Pacifica affiliate which played an active role in Pacifica's struggle for democratization.
Affiliate stations have long requested to be represented in the governance of Pacifica to reflect that two-way relationship of what it means to be an affiliate part of the Pacifica network, not merely a customer of a product delivered by the Pacifica satellite.
Yvonne Dooley is the program director of another Pacifica affiliate, WRFG, in Atlanta, Georgia.
Having affiliates on there is an absolute essential, I think, particularly those that don't mirror the composition of the Pacifica stations. And I think with having affiliates on the board, you will get an increase to the diversity and viewpoints. And in due course, the representation of minorities would be included in that.
It will now be up to the California courts to decide the course of Pacifica's future. Pacifica's repeated failure to adopt new bylaws under the terms of the court settlement now in force raises serious uncertainties about the network's future. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Evan Davis reporting.
And that was the Free Speech Radio news story yesterday. I thought it was very good. I don't know if you got to hear it either in the afternoon broadcast from 3 to 3:30 Monday through Friday here on this station, or and when it was repeated in the evening newscast. The story is very important to all of us at KPFA, all of us that work at For Pacifica, and all of us that listen to Pacifica. This topic of bylaws that we've brought to you in the past sounds sort of dry and boring, but of course nothing is really dry and boring with Pacifica. It's hot and heavy and blood and guts and screaming and yelling, and that's sort of the process that's been happening here. The process, some folks say the issue is democracy, some folks say it's diversity, and why it can't be both is what I want to find out on this program today. I'm delighted to say that we have on the telephone with us, joining us from WBAI, where he is on the bylaw subcommittee, Bertolt Reimers. We're very happy to have you with us, Bertolt.
Hi.
And on the other line, Diallo Dantambu, who is on the local advisory board for the Houston station, KPFT. Good afternoon to you, Diallo.
Good afternoon.
And we also have joining us to sort of set the stage here for where we're at and how we got here, just sort of generally the overview. I believe we've got Carol Spooner, who is a member of the Interim Pacifica Board from this station. And, in fact, it was her listener's lawsuit that ended up getting this all into the courts and the whole long battle and war that started in 1999, we all thought had ended with the success of that lawsuit, although, the results of the lawsuit were to set up the bylaws and to establish these elections, and that's where we've gotten into sort of a swamp. Carol, are you there? No, she's not. Well, we have in studio with us Max. She is. Carol, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi.
Lightning cut me off.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, we're having a big thunderstorm up here.
Ah. And also here in studio, Max Blanchet, a longtime supporter and active participant in the efforts to democratize Pacifica and KPFA, a former member of the local advisory board, member of the KPFA Diversity Committee, the Elections Committee, the Bylaws Committee, and some would rightly say the architect of the whole electoral process here at KPFA. Welcome to you, Max.
Thank you very much. I'd like to correct something very quickly. I don't think I was the architect. Let me say that I was one of the masons or carpenters involved in that construction project. There were many such people.
All right.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So, Carol, let's start with you, and then we'll let you get off the phone and enjoy the lightning. There were votes that... What did the court say, first of all, and then what happened, and where are we now?
All right. Well, I'd just like to very quickly set the stage. We settled the lawsuits in December of 2001 with a settlement agreement that requires Pacifica to amend its bylaws to provide for elected local boards. We were given 15 months to get it done, and that time expired last March. In order to adopt these bylaws, we need two-thirds approval of the interim board members and majority vote approval of three of the five local boards. We got stuck last January when what we had all thought we could do, which was to set minimum requirements for people of color and women on our boards. We were 50% requirements. We were told by our lawyer working with us on the bylaws that that would not pass constitutional muster or the provisions of California anti-discrimination law. So we began last January searching about, scrambling about, desperately seeking some other acceptable means of ensuring diversity throughout Pacifica. And it became a very divisive issue with many recriminations and many, I think, misunderstandings of the law, and perhaps some desire on some part to just challenge the law and say, well, we'll do it anyway and see what comes of that. And so... in the end, we really didn't resolve it to everyone's satisfaction. The national board was split and held a vote June 26th, where the board voted seven members for a board, for a bylaws version that has no requirements in it, two members for a bylaws version that does have requirements based on the signal area demographics, and one board member for a compromise proposal that didn't have requirements in the elections of the board members but did have requirements in staffing. And then there were three other board members who said none. And
none of the above.
Yeah, none of the above. The proposition was A, B, or C, and three of them said none of the above. Technically, that was not a vote, as the proposition was put to the board, so it was counted as an abstention. And the judge here in California said, Well, you did get 7 out of 10 votes, but even if you hadn't, I'm going to call this substantial compliance on the part of the National Board, because you have worked so long and hard and made such good efforts, and it's such a difficult issue anyway.
And this was the ruling right here in the Bay Area just, what, a month ago? Or
no, less than that, mm-hmm. about July 8th or something like that. So the bylaws were then sent to the 5 local advisory boards for their approval, and the Houston Board approved by a substantial majority, and the KPFA Board approved by a substantial majority. The WPFW Board rejected it unanimously. And the this week, the Los Angeles Board rejected it by one vote, by a vote of 11 to 12. And the New York Board rejected it as well by a substantial majority. So we have 3 boards that have rejected the bylaws. We're now pretty much at an impasse. We've spent months and months and months and months wrangling and negotiating that led to failure. So where we go from here is in doubt. I believe there will be an effort to bring the national board members and at least the local board chairs together for a mediated session to see if they or we could hammer something out that we thought could get 2/3 of the national board and 3 of the 5 local boards to agree. I'm not very hopeful because I believe the national board is at a permanent stalemate, but I hope I'm wrong. But I don't really see a huge lot of hope in mediation, although certainly we have to try it. If that fails, then where are we? Well, the court might intervene, might not. I really don't know if the judge has jurisdiction to intervene, but somebody might see if the judge might be willing to intervene. And if the judge isn't willing to intervene and we cannot solve our problems and we get stalemated through mediation, then I believe under the terms of the settlement agreement, the term of the interim board will expire, and we will be reverting back to the 1999 Pacifica bylaws. And those,
which is where we all started.
Which is what started this whole fracas, when the old board concentrated all power in the national board and removed the local board's rights to elect directors. So I think we'd be back where we started 4 years ago, under the, if the settlement agreement fails and we don't pass new bylaws, then the 1999 bylaws are operative. And this board, interim board, would have to get out of Dodge by electing our own successors. I think that would be the worst possible result for Pacifica.
Now, what of the rumor that some members of the previous board, the 1999 et al. Group that was so vilified by people seeking to save the network, and your lawsuit, the settlement thereof, was seen as the saving of Pacifica by those folks. Some of those folks are still around, and they, according to what I have heard, could say, look, they've blown it. They haven't gotten it together. They have not followed the terms of the settlement. They passed the deadline. We want you, the judge, to put this thing into receivership, and we'll take it back.
Well, 2 former board members, Ken Ford and Bob Farrell, did file papers with the court saying, please don't rule on July 8th. Wait and let us get some papers filed to ask that you put Pacifica into receivership.
Meanwhile, he did rule on July 8th.
Yeah, the judge said, I'm not going to wait, but you are free to file your papers at any time. You have standing to file them, and if you want to file them, go right ahead. What do I think of that? Well, as of the date of their request, I think their request was completely preposterous. We were moving forward and were, I thought, close to resolution of the bylaws. If mediation fails and all else fails and we're stuck, putting Pacifica into receivership might be more attractive idea to the judge. However, I think he would just say, well, you're back to the 99 bylaws, elect your own successors. I'm not going to impose a receiver on you. So I don't really think receivership is a serious threat.
Hmm.
That's my personal, somewhat educated opinion. Others might see it differently.
All right. Well, I thank you for putting it into a context here, getting us to sort of where we are now. And I thank you for all of the work that you've done over the years, starting out as a KPFA listener and hearing what was going on, just as listeners now are hearing what is going on, and getting very involved and very activated and filing a lawsuit, establishing standing for listener subscribers, and now, in fact, working on bylaws that would give listener subscribers, that would ensure listener subscribers an official role in the legal entity that is Pacifica.
And staff members, too.
Indeed.
All of the staff members of Pacifica would also become legal members. I just want to sign off, Chris, by thanking so many people who have worked so hard for so long to bring us at least to the brink of democracy here. And hundreds of people around the network over the past 18 months have worked on bylaws drafted and debated and discussed and poured their hearts and minds into it. And although we have apparently reached an impasse, I think many, many people of serious goodwill have participated. And I hate to see their work trashed at this last instant, but perhaps we'll find a way through.
All right. Well, I will definitely hope for the best, and I know that you will as well. Thank you, Carol.
Sure.
Carol Spooner on the phone with us. And now let me turn in studio to Max Blanchet here and ask you, what's your opinion of where we are now in this? Are you optimistic or what?
I am very worried, very concerned about where we are. I don't know. I'm not really privy to what's happening at the level of the IPNB or what's happening in the various labs. I can't pass judgment on that, but I'm very worried. I thought we were very close to some sort of a closure on this, but this has not happened. And let's be real here. This is the only alternative network that we have in this country at this point. And it has been quite outspoken in recent months. And I'm not telling the audience or the listeners anything that they don't know. That was the only network that was offering an alternative during the terrible weeks when the war took place in Iraq, and when there was war in Afghanistan. And we have a very good thing going here. To be sure, it has never been an easy place. We all understand that. But we've got to resolve these conflicts, put them behind us so that we can truly become, truly realize the potential that we have here at Pacifica. And I think the crux of it has to be diversity, how best to achieve that. And we know that reasonable people have expressed different views on how best to do that. Even here in Berkeley, where we suddenly had consensus up to January of this year, the consensus that gelled around the idea of a somewhat modified KPFA model, where we had set asides for women and people of color. Well, that worked pretty well in the Berkeley area, certainly. And then we were confronted with that bombshell when the lawyer told us that the set asides would not fly, that this would open the network to all sorts of lawsuits. And that's where we had to reconsider the whole issue of diversity. We thought we had a fairly good understanding on that. And I must say that, in my opinion, the IPNB dropped the ball in that regard, because this is an issue that should have been addressed a year ago. And I remember at a meeting here in Berkeley, I raised the issue, that is, the legality of the set-aside arrangement that we were proposing. At that time, we were told that, well, there was nothing to worry about, and the idea was taken to the IPNB. And they were, I guess, penny wise and pound foolish. They claim that they could not afford to hire a lawyer to look at it at that point. But if we had done so, certainly we would have had much more time to consider the issue of diversity in a very timely manner and to build up a consensus from the bottoms up. And this has not happened. And we were forced to rush into various versions to try and deal with it. And this was indeed very bad. And in addition, let me say that the IPNB, in my opinion, dropped the ball also in the first quarter of this year because the leadership of it, for all practical purposes, was absent. When we needed leadership to guide the process and arrive at a timely agreement on some version, we wasted a great deal of time, in my opinion. But we are here where we are today. I'm not quite sure where we go from here. And Carol has spelled out the options quite well. Perhaps we'll go back to the IPNB. I suspect, though, that it will continue to be deadlocked. Perhaps we'll put this thing in the lap of the judge. I don't know what he will do. I'm not a lawyer. I can't second-guess what he might do. We might try and go through mediation. But again, we will be wasting time. We cannot afford to waste time, in my opinion. Now, that is what is so heartbreaking. And given that people in the area, and not just in this area, but throughout, have worked so hard to arrive at some sort of a solution, that is very hard to take.
Okay, so we've heard from our local folks, the voices that we're familiar with, and I'm very curious to hear from the folks from our sister stations who have been waiting patiently on the line, and I'm very grateful for your patience. Bertolt Reimers from WBAI. Now, Bertolt, I understand that you were in favor of the plan that KPFK just voted down, although that puts you in the minority at your own station on the bylaw subcommittee. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'd like to actually address that issue. I think I respect the grace of the folks from Berkeley and California. I think in New York, I think it was slightly a little more combative, and we've been exposed to a lot more abuse, so I'll be a little more direct and aggressive, unfortunately. First of all, I'm a black man from Haiti, and I'm very proud of being a black man. I was in college, and I joined a black fraternity, so I'm very strong and firm about my blackness. I had organized quite a few minority career conferences. However, when I joined the WBAI bylaw subcommittee and the whole movement to regain Pacifica, I was a silent listener since 1979. And after the coup at WBAI, I decided to join actively in the fight. And I found out very quickly that there were a lot of unwillingness of a lot of people, especially those in power, to compromise. For example, from the very beginning, when we organized against the coup at WBAI, we had a group large enough that we could have many subcommittees, and one of the subcommittees was the election subcommittee to analyze to see how we can deal with this election once we win the battle. Those people who are now claiming to be for diversity, the Unity Caucus in New York and so on, were always against elections. They were against the Carol Spooner lawsuit. Mimi Rosenberg, that you heard, was always against the Listener lawsuit. Basically, what's going on is those people are against elections for good reason, to a certain extent. They are afraid of a takeover by some outside forces. And therefore, they do not trust the listeners. They do not force the democratic process. They believe in elite group of progressive telling us how to run the station as it was always run. The diversity question, I believe, would be taken care of by the standard transferable vote system that I've been researching for the past 3 years. In Berkeley, actually, the 50% requirements that were imposed on the KPFA model was used only for one person to turn over. I believe John Sheridan was the white person who had the least vote who was kicked out, and then a black lab member was nominated. So therefore, this tells you that unlike the claim of the Unity Caucus, who are the precursor of the diversity language group, the idea that white people vote for white people and black people vote for white people defy the progressive stance of Pacifica. That we do not think that way. I would rather think in a class, at a class level, where we know that we have those who run the means of production and those who are exploited and those who barely can survive. And Pacifica should be all about that. I'm against the diversity language committee and the whole percentage and distribution because, for example, in New York, you have about 50 different Latino groups. You have the Colombians, you have the Spanish Puerto Rican from Puerto Rico, you have those who were born in El Barrio, where I live, Spanish Harlem, and you have those Puerto Rican who live in the Bronx. You have the Colombians. You have a lot of reactionary Colombians. You have some Cubans, huge Cuban community. So how do you break that down? You know, and why should you have a specific group of people being represented based solely the color of the skin? For example, I used to tour a lot of parties from the Haitian community, and I have a list of about 5,000 Haitians. I can easily get them to sign a petition and say that I do represent the Haitian community. That does not mean anything because, you know, these people are interested in parties. They know me well. And, you know, these are very superficial ways of looking at things, you know. And even from the very KPFA model, the 50%, I always told Carol Spooner that I was against that. Now, Carol Spooner defended the 50% very adamantly, you know, because she felt that racism in this country was institutionalized, and we could definitely have the 50% requirement. I believe the standard transferable vote would take care of that, and we can actually go ahead with the first election and see how that works and modify and change it according to the results. The claim that most white people at Pacifica were against the 50% because of all the implication and the legal implication is, in my opinion, race baiting. You know, it's an intimidation tactic, and that's why I'm very angry in New York because it diminishes me as a black man. You know, the idea that we black people do not know what's good for us, so therefore we need this push to have a $25 subscription to become a member of the station. For the past 3 years, within all this argument, the Unity Caucus in New York has not enrolled more than 50 more members at the WBAI, black members, minority members. See, I believe that these past 3 years, if we had done a concerted effort to reach out to communities of color and to increase the membership, you know, then you would have a higher membership of people of color.
Okay, Bertold, I'm going to interrupt you. You're bringing up stuff that lots of us here won't know enough about to be able to put into context, including the thing about the Unity Caucus, but I'm gathering from what you said what it is. But I would like to ask Max to explain this 50% requirement. What is he referring to when he says that?
Well, it's patterned after the KPFA model. The idea was to have set aside so that at least 50% of the seats would be reserved for people of color and women.
And this is what was found, this is what a lawyer told you was not legal.
Well, told the IPNB that it would be open the network to all sorts of challenges.
Okay, well, now let's go to Diallo, who's really been patient. Diallo Dantambu from KPFT in Houston. Now, the Houston Local Advisory Board voted overwhelmingly in favor of Plan B, which was the KPFA quote-unquote model, the one that got the most votes on the IPNB, except that, as I understand, Diallo, you were opposed to this plan, which puts you in the minority at your station. Why don't you explain what you think is wrong with this plan and what you think of where we are now and what's happening next?
All right. Well, first of all, excuse me. The last name is Kantambu.
Kantambu. Pardon me. It's spelled wrong for me. Pardon me.
Yes. At our lab, of which I'm a member in Houston, there were only two of us that voted for Plan B. I mean, I voted against Plan B.
Uh-huh.
And we had a very unique environment. Well, maybe not unique, but certainly a very volatile environment there in that each time there was a vote to be held, many B supporters would come out and be very vociferous and almost threatening to some extent in their support of Plan B. And I think what has happened around the network that a lot of people may be ignoring is the fact that people were not listening to each other.
Hmm.
People were not trying to negotiate or get along with each other. People were demonizing each other. You know, you hear, I've talked with a lot of people all across the country, and you hear people talk about those people in New York, the Unity Caucus, are trying to underhandedly do this, and those folks in this area are underhandedly trying to do that. And what happens in an environment like that is that all sides go to war with each other. And what happens is that we all lose. And as I had said from the beginning, that if we ended up with a 3 out of 5 solution, that's really a loss, not a win. We need a 5 out of 5 solution.
Hmm.
But the only way you can get that, people have to be willing to sit down and discuss these issues with each other, believe that whatever people say about why they support or don't support something is from their point of view, their honest opinion about what it is, and try to work something out. But that just hasn't happened. The power plays, the power politics took over, and a lot of people got angry. And that was pretty clear in the Washington, D.C. area when recently, just before Plan B was voted on, over 150 people turned out, angry people who were against Plan B.
Mm-hmm.
Because people felt like they were being railroaded. In the Houston area, where I have a lot of good friends, I hope.
That's where you're talking to us from. I hope so, too.
Yeah, the effort, the judge voted, the judge gave his order or passed judgment on Tuesday. Our lab meeting was on Wednesday, and they voted on it so quickly, it wasn't even time to get it on the printed agenda. No one took notice, would accept the fact that the judge said it needed to take place in a special meeting. Other stations decided to wait 10 days before they would take the vote, but in Houston, we rushed to get it done. They screamed and yelled, and the vote went through. Well, all that does is create anger in people who are being run over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've had a lot of that happen throughout the network. And we're at a point right now, it seems to me, where we have to sit down and decide that we're going to seriously discuss the issues with each other, not try to assume that there are conspiracies at every corner, and continues to demonize each other, and see if we can't sensibly talk our way into a solution that most of the network areas can support. And I think that's possible.
Well, that's good. Let me reintroduce this for listeners who may not have been with us at the top of the hour. We're discussing the current situation with the Pacifica Foundation, as all of you must know by now, starting in around 1999 and before in the minds of some folks. There was an attempted coup, really. That's how most of us here saw it. And there were lots of efforts to try to stop what we feared at the time was a potential to sell off the stations for profit, and also a disenfranchising of the local stations in favor of a centrally located national board. And there was one effort that was... It resulted in a lawsuit, and the lawsuit was settled in favor of the people who had filed the lawsuit against the Pacifica folks. And part of the settlement of that lawsuit provided for an interim national board to be established. Those folks were supposed to develop a set of bylaws, and then those bylaws had to be approved by the national board, and then also approved by 3 out of 5 of the local advisory boards. And this week, They were not approved by 3 out of 5. So now we're back to where we started, with no bylaws, and the time is up that was given to us by the court. So what happens next is really unclear. But Diallo, I appreciate what you were saying about the atmosphere and the nastiness of the discussions and what that then leads to. What, in your view, you said we have to discuss the issues. What, in your view, are the issues?
Well, not to get bogged down in the details, there are a number of things that need to be dealt with, but what actually has to come about as a compromise is somewhere between what is B and what some people call A. It's really interesting that version C, which to my mind was a pretty reasonable compromise, got the lowest number of votes. People were split down the middle either one way or the other. Of course, right now, the only way to solve this, I believe, and a number of us are pushing for that around the country, is to bring the IPNB and all lab chairs together in one location for a facilitated session to try to compromise on these bylaws so that we can get elections done. And to do that, I believe that we're going to have to agree on something like the top five most important issues prior to that meeting, so that when we get there, we don't have to work over everything. Some things can be agreed upon beforehand, and try to see if we can't find a settlement.
Well, I've been hearing that the debate is either you think that diversity is the major issue and that Plan B doesn't address that issue, or that democracy is the issue and that people who are calling about complaining about diversity are distracting from, are the ones that don't want an election.
Well, that's what people will say
on
the different sides.
Yeah.
But the people I talk to who are concerned about diversity, they convince me they're concerned about diversity. Those who claim it's about democracy, I believe that they are concerned about democracy. What we got to do here, though, is we got to understand that there are concerns on both sides. And rather than try to overpower the other, we've got to sit down and talk to each other because each side has concerns. And if we can't understand each other, which Pacificans are supposed to not only do, but supposed to help the rest of the world do.
Yes, it's an irony that we're in the communications business.
we have a real problem. How can we talk to people about diversity and affirmative action if we can't deal with it under our own tent? We've really got to stop and come together to try to talk about this issue in a serious way. Because any time you try to force something on people, all you do is create the counterforce that's going to come back and hit you later. If B had a pass by one or two votes, it would have been turmoil in this network for the rest of the next 2 or 3 years because there were too many dissatisfied people that would have been angry the whole time, that would have been sniping at those who were in control because they were mad about the fact that their concerns were ignored.
Okay, and one last question, and then Max has some things that he wants to say. But I just wanted to clarify, you're listening to Diallo Kantambu in Houston, where he serves on the local advisory board for KPFT, and he voted against, he was in the minority. He was only one of two who voted no on the Plan B, and it passed with KPFT. Your concern with B was not its deficiencies about diversity, but more that you felt like you were being rushed into a vote. Did I hear you say that or no?
No, there are other parts.
Mm-hmm.
Plan B, as an example, didn't allow for a delay of elections so that the voter pool could be improved, which a lot of us thought was a pretty easy, simple thing to do. So although it included the committees of inclusion, which was a good part, it didn't quite go far enough to satisfy people who don't trust the system. And we have to understand part of the problem is not trusting the system.
Mm.
And when you try to have quick votes, when you have to have votes so fast you can't put it on the agenda, that to people feels like people are trying to pull one over on them.
I hear you. Let's turn to Max Blanchet. So, sir, after all of this, what do you think of what you've heard so far?
One thing I would like to clarify, first of all, Plan B, of course, had no set-aside. So the set-aside feature of the KPFA model had been
eliminated.
Eliminated. as a response to what the lawyer told the network. But the Plan B includes a diversity language, specifically the formation of committees of inclusion. And I'd like to point out, for those who don't know, that the language for that was developed by Mr. Kantambu in Houston. So I need to clarify that point. But also, let me make another... I think it's important to provide context also. When one listens to some folks in some quarters, you would be tempted to believe that white supremacy is rampant in this network. Now, I'll be very honest with you. I looked at the statistics of KPFA. I looked at the staffing. I looked at the programming. I looked at, the lab, which is pretty diverse. I looked at the statistics for the management levels of the network. I have trouble believing that sort of argument when, in the case of the managerial levels of the network, two-thirds of the people 1 year ago were people of color. If indeed one accepts the idea that white supremacy was rampant, I have to ask myself, what the hell were these people doing? And I'm talking about 50% of the board. So you have to start out with the fact that this was a network that really tried. Not to be sure there are problems. I'm sure there is racism. There's racist behavior. This is the society we live in. And I think all of us are interested in improving the situation. But my personal conviction, and I'm Haitian American, I'm black. Okay, let's be very clear on that. There was a genuine effort made, uneven to be sure. I thought that the Latinos were underrepresented. I thought women were underrepresented. I thought Asians were underrepresented. But there was a real effort to be inclusive. Far from being perfect, I will grant you that, but there was an effort. And we were simply not starting from ground zero. The argument, I think this is the argument that is incorporated in Plan B, was that we could improve upon that and not run the risk of having lawsuits. That was the argument. Now, reasonable people disagree on that. I can understand that. But to paint a picture whereby this place was sort of beyond the pale in terms of race relations, to me, I find very hard to accept.
I'm going to open the phones for people who are listening, because this is as a service to the listeners that we're providing this information about this new phase that Pacifica has just entered, and it's a very scary one. There is no telling what's going to happen. The next step was to develop and pass bylaws, and we've just failed to do that. So anything could happen at this point.
Can I add something quickly?
Please do, Bertolt. Bertolt Reimers at WBAI.
Yes. As a matter of fact, Mr. Diallo, I believe, is very genuine in his effort to try to come up with some ideas to put in the bylaws to, you know, so that we can live with and be... And be legally sound. However, myself, my personal, you know, and Mr. Diallo is talking about the fact that we do not listen to each other. My first year in the struggle in New York, I went out of my way to lobby the people from the other side, so-called the Unity Caucus and the Diversity Language Committee folks, to the point where I've attended private personal affairs, you know, went to their private parties, attended a few of the Black Radical Congresses or meeting in New York and so on to try to talk to them and understand what was going on. When the Unity Caucus was created, supposedly a democratic body, which was basically the, you know, Blacks for WBAI, I was not invited. I actually asked to be part of that group also because you figured the democratic process would have dissenting views within the group, talking about how that goes on, and I was not invited. So my biased views would tend to say that I believe that my side, which I represent, one of the representatives, was a lot more willing to listen. The problem we have with the Diversity Language Committee is that the so-called Draft B or Draft A gives too much power to a small group of people to decide what is the composition of the board to be elected, why it's not such, and who they choose to put in there to dilute the vote and the will of the listeners. So that is the most important. And in New York, I cannot imagine anyone on the Diversity Language Committee, those who've been pushing it, that would be on that committee without me crying foul play.
Mm.
And so let's trust the listeners. Let's have one first election on the draft B. And then the elected board can come up with some ways after monitoring the elections and monitoring the station and find out how we can improve the system. By the way, at WBAI, for the past 15 years, we've had a black general manager and a black program director for 12 years. And we still have not brought too many black listeners to the station. So it's also a question of programming. It's a question of how do you motivate people, which is very difficult, to go to the grassroots and not to and to attract not only those who are interested in our message of progressiveness, but also those who are not interested, those who are interested in opera. How do you bring them in? I believe that's the frustration of the network and the frustrations of, you know, that people of color.
Well, and right now I've got listeners on the line that I want to bring in, so I'm going to interrupt you. Bertolt Reimers on the phone from WBAI in New York, Diallo Kantambu on the telephone from KPFT in Houston, and Max Blanchet here in studio. And 510-848-4425 is the phone number. All three of our lines are busy, so we'll go for the first caller. Bruce in Albany, welcome to Living Room.
Thank you very much. You know, if it comes at the expense of pure democracy, then diversity is nothing but racist perversity.
There. Okay, well, we're going to go to Sarah in San Francisco. Thank you very much. Sarah, are you there?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that it is incredibly distressing to me that that everything that we all fought for could be lost over people not listening to each other and arriving at a compromise that at least is better than what might have happened if the people who were in power in 1999 had been able to continue going their own way. As far as diversity goes, are people forgetting that the woman who almost, you know, deprived us of the voice of you know, freedom of speech was both a woman and an African-American? I mean, there needs to be some balance, I think, in the push for diversity, which I thoroughly applaud. I mean, this is a diverse country, and I think that people of diverse backgrounds really need to be represented, but just the fact that somebody has a skin of a certain color and is of a certain gender doesn't necessarily mean that person shares the goals of the majority of the Pacifica audience and staff. And
okay, we're going to go to another caller.
I had a question,
mm-hmm.
Please. I'm a little confused about something because I've heard things that sound a little contradictory. The two boards that were the majorities of which were definitely opposed to Plan B, and the people who were opposed in Los Angeles, I can't figure out from the discussion whether they were opposed to not having set-asides, the fact that Plan B didn't have set-asides for minorities, or whether they didn't like the fact that, or whether they were opposed to having a more democratic selection of the board. I wonder if you could clarify that.
Well, what you'd have to do is talk to each and every one of them individually. That's why I asked that question of Diallo, and it was not, he did, the people who are opposed to it are opposed to it for different reasons, and there are those who are characterizing those opposed to it as being anti-democracy, but that's sort of a broad brush to use to paint, and I certainly couldn't say that that's how you would describe what Diallo had to say.
Actually,
if I could just say...
Go ahead, Diallo.
Some of the responses I heard just a few minutes ago are sort of an example. I want to say that in no way that what I said indicates that I believe that there's racism rampant throughout Pacifica. All right.
Mm-hmm.
What I said is that we weren't listening to each other,
mm-hmm.
and being aware of and being attentive to each other's concerns. Okay, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm. Amen. And Bertolt, you wanted to add something?
Oh yeah, I agree. Mr. Diallo definitely did not insinuate anything like that. However, I'm on about 17 different lists, Yahoo group, exchanging ideas with people on the network. Just about everyone from, a lot of people from the other side are basically calling Carol Spooner a racist and so forth and so on. So, Mr. Diallo, I was not referring to you at all.
Well, actually, I wasn't referring to your comments. I was.
I know.
There's plenty of nastiness to go around, but that's why I am very happy that the two of you could join us, because I think that you're very rational and thoughtful people. So I appreciate that you're presenting
about
your views.
The comment concerning the different views for opposing Plan B in LA, I do not believe it's. I think one of diversity is one, but it's not as strong as they believe in some form of more decentralization, removing powers from the Pacific National Board and giving a lot more powers to the local board.
Well, and that was many folks said that was a misconception that Plan B did not deprive local boards or local audiences or local interests of power in the situation that was being misportrayed.
Yes, exactly. I believe Mr. McBenshek can probably clear up that more, because I believe he set it up so that there was a balance of power, like the American Constitution, where different branches would check each other. The listeners themselves had the ultimate power to vote up or down any change in the bylaws that would affect their standing in the foundation.
Right. Well, we've got more listeners on the line. I've got about a minute left. I want to get Richard in San Francisco. Welcome to Living Room.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, at the risk of being charged with paranoia, which is entirely possible, I want to ask. Is there any possibility that there has been or will be a serious and impartial consideration of the possibility that there are certain factions within the KPFA network who are acting as molds for the old Francis Berry cabal, who are trying to throwing rocks in the road simply to disrupt the reconstruction of KPFA and to accomplish...
All right, I'm going to interrupt you. I see where you're going, and we want to give the folks that are here a chance to respond to that. Max, you go first.
It's not... I have trouble accusing people of having some sort of evil intent. I suspect that quite a few people have an honest difference of opinion regarding how diversity is best achieved. We talked about LA. There may be a bit of a power struggle involved there, because some people are in power, they don't want to lose out. And I know the issue of centralization versus decentralization is important in the minds of some folks. I don't want to throw accusations at people, because I simply don't have any basis to do that. In my darker moods, I certainly think some of those thoughts, but I try and be rational about it.
I have to interrupt you, because I want to ask if there is a place online where people can go to get information. It was suggested to me that I look at www.wbai.net. That's definitely one place where you can get a lot of the documentation of this whole process. Diallo, can you recommend anything to anybody about where they can look some of this stuff up?
I myself have been going to WBAI.net. That seems to be the best place for a source of information.
Okay, I thank all of you so much for joining me, and I'm sure we're all frustrated not having enough time. Bertolt Reimers in WBAI, Diallo Kantambu in Houston, Max Blanchet here in studio. I want to tell you, tomorrow there's a documentary film fundraiser, Fields of Fuel, Fueling the Future 1 Acre at a Time, 7 p.m. at Cell Space in San Francisco, 2050 Bryant Street tomorrow night. Don't forget the Angela Davis event tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, speaking on Our Prisons Obsolete at First Congregational Church in Oakland, Harrison at 27th. And also Monday evening, Berkeley Rep Thrust Stage, co-creators of the Lysistrata Project, will be presenting an evening on art and activism in these times. We are out of time. Tomorrow on the Saturday Morning Talkies, we're going to be talking with about David Kelly, the story that may have brought down the Blair government, and also about a new documentary about community farms. I hope that you'll be able to join me 9 to 10 a.m. on Saturday. We're out of here. Thanks to Erica Bridgman at the controls.
KPFA Free Speech Radio presents a special welcoming event for Gus Newport, Beacon of the Left.